The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles from the Harvard Heart Letter and also from the Harvard Health Letter. And the first thing I'm going to do is just to finish the section of the June 2022 Harvard Heart Letter entitled Research We're Watching. And the third section is entitled Mammograms May Help Reveal Cardiovascular Risk. The routine mammograms that women receive to check for breast cancer may also offer clues to their risk for heart disease, new research suggests. White spots or lines visible on mammograms indicate a buildup of calcium in breast arteries. This breast arterial calcification is different from coronary artery calcification, which is known to be a marker for higher cardiovascular risk. For the study, researchers followed 5,059 postmenopausal women aged 60 to 79 for 6.5 years. They found that those with breast arterial calcification were 51% more likely to develop heart disease or have a stroke than those without calcification. This study was published in the March 15, 2022 issue of Circulation Cardiovascular Imaging. Mammography reports don't always include information about calcification in the breast arteries. The study authors hope their findings lead to changes in the guidelines so that reports include this information in the future. They caution, though, that the absence of calcification in breast arteries doesn't necessarily translate to a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. Now we're going to continue with the Harvard Heart Letter. And the next section is going to be entitled Rethinking Obesity. Experts want to reframe how we talk about and treat this common disease, which is a threat to cardiovascular health. Misconceptions about obesity are common. Many people believe that if people with obesity would just exert extra willpower to eat less and exercise more, they could easily reach and stay at a healthy, normal weight. Even people who struggle with obesity may believe this, despite the fact that repeated personal experience often tells them otherwise. The growing prevalence of obesity, which now affects 42% of people in this country, is further evidence that it's a complex, challenging disease. Incorrect assumptions and biases about obesity can really derail progress against the problem, which has become the most common chronic disease of our time, says Dr. Fatima Cody Stanford, an obesity specialist and associate professor of medicine and pediatrics at the Harvard Medical School. Addressing these issues and encouraging people to pursue effective treatments can also reduce the risk of multiple serious health conditions that often go hand in hand with obesity. These include type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and sleep apnea, all of which are closely linked to cardiovascular disease. First of all, the article talks about misplaced bias. To begin with, don't refer to other people or yourself as obese, but rather as a person with obesity, Dr. Stanford recommends. Bias and stigma against people with obesity is widespread, often due to a belief that poor choices and lack of motivation are the only causes. A number of interconnected factors play a role, says Dr. Stanford. A major issue is the obesogenic environment we've all been living in for the past few decades. One aspect is the constant exposure and ready access to jumbo-sized portions of highly processed foods, which now make up more than half of the food that Americans eat. Laden with fat, sugar, and salt, these tempting foods are easy to gobble down quickly. And then the extra calories are often stored as fat. Another is lack of physical activity, which makes it harder to maintain a healthy weight. But other lifestyle and health issues can also contribute to weight gain and foil weight loss efforts, says Dr. Stanford. These are some of the key culprits. The first is lack of sufficient sleep. Too little sleep, especially 6 or fewer hours per night, is a well-known contributor to weight gain. Sleep disorders like insomnia may be to blame a fixation with screens, computers, smartphones, and television often prevent us from getting enough shut-eye. Depression, anxiety, and stress. These common mental health issues can sap your motivation to exercise and to prepare healthy meals. They may also trigger emotional eating, which often leads to overeating high-calorie foods. Then there are prescription medicines. 1 in 5 people take prescription medicines that can cause weight gain. These include certain drugs used to treat diabetes, high blood pressure, depression, muscle pain, and inflammation. All these factors, along with genetics, affect metabolism, which is governed by the hypothalamus. This brain region, which regulates many body functions, such as temperature control and hunger, also works to keep body weight within a narrow range, or set point. That means people with obesity often regain the weight they lose. Their brain works against them to return to their previous higher weight, Dr. Stanford explains. So what can you do? That's not to say people with obesity can't lose weight, but they often need a more nuanced, personalized approach that goes beyond diet and exercise, perhaps including weight loss medicines or surgery, Dr. Stanford says. She treats patients at the Massachusetts General Hospital Weight Center. Dr. Stanford never suggests specific diets. Instead, she counsels people to focus on eating lean protein, whole grains, fruits and vegetables, and to find their soulmate exercise, something they'll enjoy during every day. She also helps them address the other lifestyle issues that can affect weight, getting enough sleep, treating mental health problems, and swapping out weight-promoting medications when possible. To find a physician near you who specializes in treating obesity, the Obesity Action Coalition maintains a searchable list at https://obesitycareproviders.com. That's OBESITYCAREPROVIDERS, all one word, .com. Finally, from the Harvard Heart Letter of June 2022, comes an article entitled Warning Signs of Early Heart Failure. Recognizing and treating heart failure sooner rather than later may slow progression of this serious condition. If you start feeling a bit more tired or winded than normal, it's easy to write it off as growing older, or being out of shape, or being overweight. But if these symptoms persist, don't ignore them, especially if you also notice swelling in your ankles and difficulty breathing when you lie down. These are all classic symptoms of early heart failure, which happens when the heart isn't able to pump effectively enough to deliver blood throughout the body. Recent developments in both detection and treatment may help to ease the burden of heart failure, which is a leading cause of hospitalization in people 65 and older. Usually people aren't aware that they may be vulnerable to developing heart failure, nor do they appreciate how dangerous it can be. But we have tools to identify early heart failure in people at the highest risk, such as those with type 2 diabetes, says cardiologist Dr. James Januzzi, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. New guidelines from the American Diabetes Association recommend that people with type 2 diabetes receive yearly blood tests for BNP, that's brain natriuretic peptide, or a test for N-terminal pro-brain natriuretic peptide, which is called NT-proBNP. These biomarkers, which heart muscle cells release when under stress, have long been used to diagnose and monitor heart failure. Screening people who are especially vulnerable to heart failure may reveal the problem sooner. A timely diagnosis means earlier access to the array of potentially helpful therapies, Dr. Januzzi says. Earlier this year, the FDA approved the expanded use of empagliflozin, also called Jardiance, for treating people with the most common form of heart failure in older people, known as heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. Originally developed to treat type 2 diabetes, empagliflozin was later found to help keep people with heart failure out of the hospital and alive longer. Another effective heart failure treatment is a combination of two blood pressure drugs, sacubitril and valsartan, which is called Entresto. Other older generic drugs like beta blockers and mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists are also very useful. Coronary artery disease is the number one cause of heart failure in the United States, but a study in the March 2022 issue of the Journal of the American College of Cardiology found that only about a third of people who get a diagnosis of heart failure are tested for coronary artery disease within 3 months. This disappointing trend suggests that people with heart failure are often undertreated, says Dr. Januzzi, who co-authored an editorial accompanying the study. Dr. Januzzi urges all his patients to follow the American Heart Association's Life Simple 7 Heart Healthy Habits to lower their risk of all types of cardiovascular disease. People with type 2 diabetes should ask about getting a yearly BNP test to check for early heart failure. Anyone who notices possible heart failure symptoms should be evaluated by a doctor, and those found to have heart failure should make sure that they're assessed for coronary artery disease, as the findings will affect the treatment that they receive. There is a accompanying segment that's called The Faces of Heart Failure, F-A-C-E-S. And FACES stands for F, fatigue. A weakened heart can't deliver enough oxygen-rich blood to meet the body's needs, causing a general sense of tiredness or fatigue. Then there's A, activity limitation. People with heart failure tire easily. They often struggle to do everyday activities like preparing a meal or taking a short walk. Then there's C, congestion. The heart's poor pumping ability causes blood to back up and fluid to leak into the lungs. This lung congestion can cause coughing and wheezing. Then there's E for edema. Excess fluid can collect in the ankles, the legs, the thighs, and the abdomen. All the extra fluid can cause rapid weight gain. Finally, there's S, shortness of breath. Congestion makes it harder for the lungs to remove carbon dioxide and replenish the blood with fresh oxygen. This makes breathing difficult. Shortness of breath is often worse when people lie down because excess fluid from the lower body moves up toward the lungs. That concludes the Harvard Heart Letter. Now I'm going to turn to the Harvard Health Letter, also for June 2022. And the first article in the Harvard Health Letter of June is entitled, The Best Ways to Identify Processed Foods. Even healthy-looking food can be ultra-processed, and this increases the risk for inflammation and disease. Keeping overly processed food out of your diet is important to keep and stave off chronic inflammation, the persistent activation of the immune system, and many chronic diseases linked to inflammation. Avoidance becomes challenging when you start thinking about what you should count as a processed food. Some processing can be beneficial to health. Done well, some processing can preserve the nutritional value of foods, such as during the winter when we don't have local fruits and vegetables. Processing can also make food safer, like pasteurized milk, which kills harmful germs. Processes like fermentation can sometimes improve the healthfulness of foods, like yogurt, says Dr. Walter Willett, professor of epidemiology and nutrition at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. So when is processing harmful? What processed foods should you avoid? What are processed foods? Processed foods are those that have been changed from their original form in some way. Maybe they've been chopped or frozen like vegetables. Maybe the inedible parts have been removed, like the shells from nuts. That type of change is called minimal. At the next level, processed foods have a few added ingredients. For example, a cracker might have three ingredients, wheat, oil, and salt. Freshly baked bread or canned vegetables may be packed in water and salt. Foods with even more processing are called ultra-processed. Ultra-processing means the original food is not recognizable, and they included additives like preservatives, oil, sugar, salt, coloring, and flavoring. It's what we mean by junk food. Examples of ultra-processed foods are hot dogs and deli meat, cheese puffs, donuts, frozen pizza, white bread, cookies, microwavable dinners, and soda. When experts warn that processed foods are bad for us, they usually mean ultra-processed foods. These foods pose health risks for several reasons. Processing often strips food of their nutritional value, like refining whole grains. Processing can also create harmful molecules like trans fats or add ingredients like salt and sugar in large amounts that are harmful. Eating lots of ultra-processed foods is associated with increased risk for chronic inflammation. Many chronic diseases like heart disease, diabetes, inflammatory bowel disease, obesity, cancer, and early death. For example, a 2019 BMJ study of more than 105,000 people followed for 5 years found that for every 10% increase in the amount of ultra-processed foods the participants ate, their risk of heart attack or stroke went up 12%. And another 2019 BMJ study, this one involving almost 20,000 people followed for 10 years, found that participants who ate more than 4 servings of ultra-processed foods per day had a 62% higher risk of dying during the study from any cause compared with those who ate 2 servings per day. Generally speaking, it's easy to spot ultra-processed foods. They're the ones with long ingredient lists. They're found on store shelves or in freezers, refrigerated sections, delis, or bakeries. Ultra-processed foods include packaged, ready-to-eat entrees or meals, prepared side dishes, snacks, or sweets of any kind, like cookies or cakes. But sometimes ultra-processed foods appear to be healthy when they're not. For example, ultra-processed versions of fruit-flavored yogurts, refrigerated soups, refrigerated pastas, granola bars, juices, breakfast cereals, frozen yogurt, low-fat salad dressing, condiments, butter substitutes, low-salt crackers, or nut butters. How can you tell if something is ultra-processed? It's just a matter of reading the ingredient list. If you see numerous ingredients, including chemicals and any words you don't recognize, the food is probably ultra-processed. It may seem hard to avoid ultra-processed food, especially if you're on the go, or if you'd simply like to indulge in a ready-to-eat muffin, a deli sandwich, or a homemade ragu with chicken sausage. Is it ever okay to break the rules? Almost anything is okay if you break the rules once a month, Dr. Willett says, but keep an eye on the other ingredients. The ragu could be fine if the salt is kept below 200 milligrams. Keep your total daily salt intake below 2,300 milligrams per day, unless your doctor advises a lower threshold. Limit saturated fat to no more than 10% of your daily calories. Keep added sugars to no more than 24 grams per day, 36 grams per day for men. As much as possible, eat whole, unprocessed foods, like vegetables, legumes, fruits, whole grains, nuts, and seeds. Just because foods are unprocessed does not mean that they're healthy. A diet based on red meat, milk, and potatoes is unprocessed, but it's far from optimal. The article goes on to mention the dangers of processed meats. Processed meats are among the least healthy foods you can eat, like bacon, sausage, ham, hot dogs, salami, and deli meat. Eating lots of processed meat is associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease, as well as colorectal cancer. A study in the Journal of Epidemiology of almost 500,000 people found that those who ate red or processed meat 4 or more times per week had a 20% higher risk for developing colorectal cancer during the 5-year follow-up period compared with people who ate red or processed meat less than twice a week. The International Agency for Research on Cancer classifies processed meat as carcinogenic to humans for colorectal cancer. Now we're going to turn in the Harvard Health Letter to a section called News Briefs. And the first section is called Protein Intake is Associated with Less Cognitive Decline. A Harvard study published in the January 2022 issue of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition says that getting enough protein in your diet may be important for protecting your cognition. Researchers evaluated the self-reported dietary habits and health of 77,000 men and women who were followed for 20 years. Compared with eating carbohydrates, eating protein was associated with a lower odds of developing cognitive decline. It didn't take much to make a difference. For every 5% of calories that come from animal protein instead of carbohydrates, there was an 11% lower risk for developing dementia. For every 5% of calories that came from plant protein, there was a 26% lower risk for developing dementia. beans and legumes had the strongest protective association. Peas and lima beans were associated with a 28% lower risk of cognitive decline. The study was observational and doesn't prove that eating more protein will protect your brain. But we already know that proteins are the building blocks of muscle and organs and are essential for tissue and cell repair and the production of important brain chemicals. So be sure to add proteins to your plate, especially plant-based proteins like beans, lentils, nuts, and seeds. How much exercise does it take to avoid heart problems in your 70s? Any amount of exercise is better than none, but at least 20 minutes of daily physical activity could be the sweet spot for avoiding cardiovascular problems in your 70s, based on an observational study from Italy, published in the journal Heart in February 2022. The study included 2,800 people aged 65 or older who were followed for more than 20 years. People who got between 20 and 40 minutes of exercise per day, like brisk walking, or vigorous, intense activity like gardening, working in the gym, biking, dancing, or swimming, had fewer heart attacks and cardiovascular problems and a lower risk of premature death compared with people who weren't physically active. And among men, at least 20 minutes of daily exercise was associated with a 52% lower risk of cardiovascular problems compared with people who didn't exercise. The greatest benefits were seen in men 70 to 75. It doesn't prove conclusively that exercise prevents heart disease. However, many studies have shown that moderate or vigorous intensity exercise helps protect your heart and brain, helps prevent diabetes, cancer, and other chronic disease, and reduces the risk for premature death. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.